Hello, friends. I'm glad to be back with you. As you can see, it's been 4 months from Pisces to the middle of the sign Cancer. Here we are, and you see it. Well, I hope you can bear with me. I've been through a lot lately. From the health point of view. But I find that when I begin to think seriously of the teaching, suddenly an energy comes to me which was not there before. And so I've been home from the hospital for about a week. And in the hospital for about 3 weeks, exactly 3 weeks, actually. And until this moment, I haven't been able to do much except to seek some kind of reasonable recovery and the regaining of strength. But today, I thought about you. I thought about Rays and the initiations. The moon moved into Aries. Closer to my Mercury and Sun, it's just about on the Sun now, and suddenly this infusion of energy came to me. And I thought, well, what better way to celebrate feeling like a normal human being than to get back into the Rays and the Initiations Part 2. As you know, Part 1 is done in a written form. Maybe there are some advantages to doing this in a verbal form, maybe a little more spontaneous, but also maybe a little less exacting. In any case, please bear with me as I attempt to pick up the threads and struggle on in this magnificent work of Master DK, offering a few thoughts which may be bridging thoughts, which may be of help to you. And hopefully help to me as the ideas come to me, because this preparation of the material for you is my form of study, as I've said before. Well, look, you know, we're working on the fourth ray of harmony through conflict, and he does take one ray after another. So although this is likely to be a little slower, okay, I'll do what I can and offer to you the thoughts that come to me in this regard. That doesn't mean my thoughts are any better than yours or any better than anybody else's. Simply means that I'm sharing my perspective with you on this fifth of the five volumes of the Rays and Initiations. It'd be great to be able to do this for all of them. Actually, I did for Esoteric Astrology. Exactly this. Page by page, line by line, word by word. Maybe the psychology book would be a good one to deal with. I have done old commentary work in that one. And hopefully over the next number of years, if I can push through, I'll get done a number of these things, as well as get that book that I'm working on, The Seeds of the Infinite, Seeds of the Infinite, to use, and should give you more seed thoughts to contemplate than I can contemplate or you can contemplate, but maybe awaken some perspective about the tremendous unity in which we all live, not only a unity, but an identicality. It is the necessary perception, which I call infuception. And hopefully, although it's difficult to organize those seed thoughts according to subject, and to explain some of them as they, some of them do seem a bit strange, I will somehow be able to get them to you. Well, he says, everywhere the fourth ray of harmony through conflict is active in the human family. It is, after all, the fourth kingdom and is dominating human affairs. As a matter of fact, our monads, as you know, are resident upon the fourth orbitic plane. They come in a way from the second or monadic plane, but their chief place of expression is as members of the fourth creative hierarchy on the fourth plane. So even if we manage to bring in a great second ray, we're not going to achieve any kind of respite from the conflicts of the fourth ray. Oh, here we, have a picture familiar to you at this time, I'm sure. It's from Cosmic Fire and colored in by Keith Bailey and AUM. Of the fourth plane, which is the plane that the human monads find their real work upon, and we are building the Antikorana, moving in that direction so that the fourth plane may be truly the conscious plane on which we live, following the, well, no easy thing, the fourth initiation. So the ray of harmony through conflict is dominating human affairs. Later, it will be the great second ray soul of humanity, which will align with the second plane on which the monads are truly found. But foreseeably, since we are the fourth kingdom, and it will be a long time before we're moving into the fifth, the fourth ray will remain active everywhere in the life of the individual, in the lives of groups, organizations, and churches, in the life of nations, and in the life of mankind as a whole. The issues are being clarified. There's so much, through friction and its ultimate harmonization. It's amazing how friction and conflict can clarify where you stand. So the line is being drawn, and the great Lord, the Christ, says, "I come to bring not peace, but the sword of discrimination between good and evil and higher values and lesser values and the soul values and personal values." Right now in the world, we have a big conflict between soul inclusiveness and personalism. I don't need to name names, and you can understand it yourself. The issues are being clarified, and humanity is being led from one renunciation to another, because after all, the fourth degree, fourth degree is called the Great Renunciation, especially in the East. And in the West, it's called by a name which is a little more threatening. It's called the Crucifixion. But there's not much difference. Maybe in the West, which is more given to manifestation, things work out more on the physical plane. But inwardly, the psyche is crucified, stretched upon the arms of the, fixed cross first, and then you dismount the fixed cross. And before mounting the cardinal cross, you undergo this great experience of aloneness. Midway between, and there is a kind of crucifixion in which you renounce all lesser values and lesser perceptions, and can thereby, as a higher initiate, imminently wield those energies rather than being subject to them. So humanity is being led from one renunciation to another, until someday the human kingdom will unitedly take the fourth initiation and the great renunciation will be accepted, we might say, by the higher powers. Because after all, we have to make, well, humanity has to accept it too. And when it does, the higher powers will allow that forward progress. The fourth initiation will be accepted. When can this be? Will it be yet in this round? Probably not. No. Will it be in this chain? It may well be after the judgment day at some point, but the judgment day is still millions of years ahead, the real judgment day. Whatever we have now is simply an anticipation of that day when three-fifths of humanity will remain on our planet and will pursue the spiritual path, because minimally the human being will be in the initial phases of the path, though some will be very high. And the other two-fifths will go to inner training, and I suspect to the planet Mars, in this separation of the sheep and the goats being the initiates or applicants to initiation, and the sheep being those who follow and still have a lot to learn about the spiritual life. This step, lying far ahead as yet in the future, will affiliate humanity with the hierarchy and release millions of men from the thraldom of materialism. And before the fourth initiation, perception is materialistic, even at the third initiation, because the causal body, interestingly enough, is still a material form within the dense physical vehicle of the solar logos. So, you know, here we have a drop or two, I think, as Master K.H. said, a drop or two does not make a man monsoon, but it presages the coming of the monsoon. So here, maybe a few of those who are interested will take initiation, and increasingly in their thousands and, eventually in their millions. It'll take a while, but we who study Master DK and his magnificent work want to be among those who take advantage of the opportunity offered, so that we can be of use and help in leading many others along the path that will allow them to pass through the door into greater light and wider consciousness. This moment in human history will inevitably come. The first indication that the distant vision has been glimpsed might be noted in the prevalent instinct to share, motivated at present by the instinct to self-preservation. Well, when the herd gets together, if you've ever seen the water buffalo herd protect itself against lions, you see how the herd does render survival more likely. Motivated at present by the instinct to self-preservation, but definitely developing as a possible mode of action upon far horizon of man's thinking. And here, every time the word far horizon, think of Jupiter. And, this is not going to take place until the judgment day and afterwards. And as far as I understand, that is still something to be occurring in this fourth chain. Now, there are other chains on which humanity will develop, and probably higher analogies to the judgment day, everything that can occur in a round on our chain can occur in another chain of the same number. I think the law of analogy will hold, and, you know, Venus has somehow made it through five chains, I believe, and completed its whole process. Whether Earth will require to go through seven chain rounds, well, scheme rounds, let's call them scheme rounds, rather than five, it still remains to be seen. Earth is behind, as we know, should be the equal of Venus at this time, but is not for various reasons. The planetary logos has chosen and that way, and mistakes were made, but then who are we to say these are the gods? These are the gods. And we are in no position to judge the gods. And they are relatively perfect compared to us, and even, well, when you think about a compassionate mistake like the Buddha made, as we are told he stayed with Earth service, DK calls it a very understandable mistake because of the Buddha's deep attachment to humanity. And the planetary logos on a much higher level, it seems that the motive for the mistake was premature compassion related to love. It happened on the moon chain, we are told, and there's been a great effort to correct that mistake, if we can call it that, being in relatively such a lowly position. True sharing. You know, just just look at how the Pope, our present Pope, wants to behave and how he thinks of humanity, and then look at some other political figures who speak only out of what they understand as their own self, namely the lower egoic self. It's, well, you could say it's pitiful, but it's developmental, and that's just the way it is. But we cannot let the lower part of the elemental part of humanity choose its leaders. The result will be disaster. Think back to Plato the Initiate and his philosopher king, and all the training that the philosopher king had to go through in order to uphold that position. It's such a contrast between attempted democracy, rooted somewhat in ignorance, a great deal within the elemental nature of man, and wise leadership. I think Plato, he tried to institute his philosopher king idea. Was it in a local nation? Was it, is the word Syracuse comes to mind, or Syria? I'm probably incorrect, but it was a local nation where the local king wanted to bring Plato to his country and institute the philosopher king idea. But of course, the ruler had in mind that he was the philosopher king, and he was by no means ready to be such. And so basically, Plato was arrested and thrown in prison and sent off on some galley somewhere and rescued by pirates, of all things. So people, even though they think they are ready for the enactment of high ideals, may not be ready at all. And we should think of that too, you know. We study wonderful things, but then, oh, when it comes to applying them, how ready really are we? In what I've been through recently in terms of health, I just understand the need for humility, caution, vigilance, a reduction of presumption, a reduction of overconfidence. I think all of us, you know, will be up against it one day when we understand that under Saturn we must proceed with caution, under that great teacher Saturn. So anyway, the horizons are expanding. And whenever you're talking about expanding horizons, the great inclusive sharing planet Jupiter is there. True sharing definitely involves many little renunciations. So we think about that and how important are these daily little lettings go, as it were, of things of lesser value, building up to the great one. I mean, if we can't renounce in little ways, we're never going to make the great renunciation. And it is upon these small renunciation that the capacity, small renunciation, that the capacity for freedom is slowly being generated, and the habit of renunciation. It doesn't mean just, you know, giving up something of value. It means sacrifice. It means giving up something of lesser value for something of greater value. So that capacity for freedom is slowly being generated, and the habit of renunciation, think of that, do we have it? Or do we have, you know, the habit of selfishness, of grasping for ourselves, asking for the personal self, grasping? Well, crucifixion takes care of that, and crucifixion upon the fixed cross, and later upon one's own cross, as it were, between the fixed and cardinal cross, that takes care of the grasping tendencies. Only the empty nail-marked hands can be trusted or endowed with the great riches of the ages, the great energies which can then be wielded. So freedom, capacity for freedom, coming from Sirius, we know, where the great law of freedom prevails, if you fulfill your karma, is slowly being generated, and the habit of renunciation can eventually be stabilized. This capacity and these habits, capacity for freedom, I want to underline that too. Capacity for freedom. This capacity for freedom and these habits of renunciation, these unselfish activities, so tough to beat selfishness because it's so innate and so necessary at a certain point in our development. Otherwise, we just can't even build up our instrument of the lower ego to be effective in a personal sense. So these unselfish activities and these spiritual habitual attitudes are the preparatory stages for the initiation of renunciation. Just as the effort to serve one's fellow man is preparatory to taking the third initiation of transfiguration. So look, what do we have here? We have service and renunciation. And of course, the members of the New Group of World Servers are true members of somewhat initiates of the second degree and applying to the third, and are learning the meaning of really unselfish service, because at the second degree, we're under most circumstances going to defeat Mars in one sense, and a major impulse towards selfishness. We're going to succeed in doing that. But then we gain a lot. We become the rich young man of the Bible. And we have to give it all up, you know. And that's one of the last detachments, at least at our stage. Who's to say what is the detachment at the level of the Buddha, the Christ? I guess the Christ detached from his own plan, his own method of saving humanity. I guess the Buddha was learning to detach from his incredible attachment to the welfare of humanity on a certain level. And the planetary logos too, learning his own method of detachment, for it is said he is much affected by the personality impulse, at least on his own high level, and is struggling to be free of that on the fourth subplane of the cosmic astral plane, which Venus has transcended and conquered. Okay, so service and renunciation. Service building towards the third, renunciation building towards the fourth. Now, what have we here? The factor of the love wisdom, or the ray of love wisdom, as it controls the ray of harmony through conflict and implements the return of the Christ. Well, two twos are a four, you know, and there's a close relation between, the Tibetan tells us, between rays one and two, two and four, three and six, and two and six, and two and five, and one and seven. You know, there's a lot of interesting affiliations. 3 and 5. Interesting affiliations. 3 and 7. All in different ways. But ultimately, it will be 2 and 4 that humanity controls and is conditioned by. I don't know if that means that the monads in their present expression will change planes, because right now they have a Buddhic expression, and it seems a long time before that can happen. But essentially, they're rooted on the plane of the monad, and if we look even farther, once the monadic vehicle is no longer a hindrance, then they're rooted in the logoic plane in the sea of fire as a liberated monad. That's way ahead of us, and I suppose it's a seventh initiation factor, so you can truly sit at the right hand of God, Sanat Kumara, in the sea of fire. But those are words, speculations, and beyond them, well, to them, we will one day apply, and one day we will understand. In the first paragraph of this instruction, says the Tibetan, I ascribe the inevitability of Christ's imminent return to the decision of humanity to precipitate the existing conflict onto the physical plane. Goodness, that is the Great War. And well, I suppose there are many reasons why the Christ decided to return it in this way. I think that my impression is that when he received impression in the Garden of Gethsemane of the true method from the planetary logoic point of view of saving the humanity and the planet, he was given a glimpse of human danger at this time. But okay, humanity stood up to the attack against its values, and its growing spiritual values caused the anxiety of the Black Lodge and the feeling that they were losing control. When I use anxiety and feeling, those are not appropriate words, but you get what I mean. And so they said the time is right to stop this progress forward. So anyway, humanity did precipitate the Great War in 1914 to 1945. And I suppose because humanity had inwardly such a great sense of spiritual values, this was the real cause of precipitation. Even holding to those values was enough to get the Black Lodge to feel its time had to come, if it were ever to come, and if they could ever block or at least delay the reappearance of the Christ and his hierarchy. So DK comes at this from various angles. He says, the Tibetan says here, I ascribe the inevitability of Christ's imminent return. I mean, once the Christ saw this, maybe he had no choice, or at least it was totally in line with what he understood the will of God to be. Humanity's decision to precipitate the existing conflict raging in the inner worlds, where indeed it should be and is raging now, but such is the nature of our weaponry and our divisions, that we must not precipitate this conflict onto the physical plane, otherwise it may well be the end of humanity as we know it, and the whole experiment have to be reinitiated, as DK warned in his introduction to Problems of Humanity, the original introduction, which I think now is hard to find. But it is an astonishing warning to all of us. We have to take it seriously. I mean, anything involving the Black Lodge, take seriously. We may think of it as an abstraction, but it's a very real thing. And although most Black Lodge members wouldn't bother with most of us, as the Tibetan tells us, because, imagine that they care about what we little people are doing. his glamour. But Master Moria, he had had quite a saying on this. You trouble yourself with a few minor demons while the daggers of Satan are aimed at our backs, meaning them, in Shambhala. So, and yet DK does talk about attacks, and there was one disciple that RSW was undergoing something of that nature, and DK said, look, I could simply protect you, but thereby you would learn nothing. So I guess, although, let's say, a number of those who are working for the reappearance are singled out for protection, that doesn't, maybe it means that the ultimate doesn't happen, but, you know, some learning experience is also allowed so that the disciple can get stronger in handling some of these malevolent things that are so subtle and so dangerous. So we get stronger, you know, by learning how to handle some of these difficulties, which otherwise we could be protected from. And then what we learn, I mean, Master Moria says, to give all is to put on chains. Well, you know, people, young people have to learn to stand on their own two feet, and we are young in this business. And if the masters do everything for us, it's a bit like a parent doing everything for the child, and the child never learns and becomes, as Master Moria would say, a weakling. Of course, right now I'm speaking out of my own experience. You know, well, the old saying is sadder but wiser, but I'm hoping in my own case it's wiser and happier that I'm a little wiser and more cautious. So anyway, the inevitability of Christ's imminent return, because humanity decided to precipitate, or at least by holding firm, enough of them to the higher values would precipitate the conflict onto the physical plane. Now, DK desperately worked to keep that conflict on the psychological plane. But as Master Moria sometimes says, the worse the better. So the broom of God, the broom of Shambhala, could sweep clean the situation, clean it up. We have to still watch out for those devils that can re-inhabit the house that is swept clean. And DK warns us of that too. But there was a great broom, a great house cleaning, and as DK said, before World War I, first part of the Great War, nothing of the future spiritual possibilities could possibly get through. Such were the materialistic values which have been destroyed. And the hierarchy has a better take on this than we do. You know, their vision spans centuries, and we apparently have the short-term view of the personality, but they've seen an improvement and a dematerialization of consciousness. So this has determined the sphere of Christ's activity. In earlier teachings, I've also pointed out that he might come in one of three ways, or in all three of them simultaneously. Well, by the time we got to the reappearance of the Christ, we know, although some dispute it, that a physical reappearance will be part of it. It doesn't need to be born somewhere. We understand the use of a Maya Varupa will do just fine. The issues which have emerged as the result of the conflict upon the physical plane and of its shifting by man's decision onto the mental plane have made completely evident the fact that the locale of the Christ influence will be, therefore, the entire three worlds of human evolution, which naturally includes physical levels of experience and demands his presence. Well, we better make that big. This is just a clear statement that the Christ will appear on all the different levels, including the physical. So many people protest against that. I think Steiner wrote a book called Christ in the Etheric, and indeed, you know, his etheric presence is felt, but things changed as a result of the Great War and of the incredible sacrificial selflessness of his decision to return to physical appearance as well, about which the Tibetans said the Christ must experience a certain, he used the word horror, when contemplating what lies ahead of them. Maybe this doesn't fit with the idea of the all-conquering Son of God before whom all the powers of darkness instantly bow as he banishes them to the nether regions and so forth, but apparently more the reality of what a great savior of the seventh degree, completing the seventh degree, will face as he attempts to help humanity make the transition, many more of humanity, into the fifth kingdom of nature. Let me make the facts somewhat clearer and enlarge somewhat upon these three modes of his appearing, mental, emotional, and etheric physical, his advent and of his physical recognition by humanity. Now, since, you know, humanity doesn't yet have totally etheric vision, we are talking about face-to-face. And in the old days, it was face-to-face. He was using the vehicle of the Master Jesus, I guess, after the crucifixion, so that his disciples would recognize him on the road to Emmaus, and later when instructions were given about the Pentecost and so forth, he probably used the reconstructed vehicle of the Master Jesus. He did say to the woman, "Don't touch me." You know, there was some kind of energy thing there, which would have been disrupted and maybe extremely dangerous for her if she had touched. But then when it came to doubting Thomas, you know, he said, "Put your hand in the wound and see if it doesn't exist." So he did everything he could to clarify his nature, his risen nature, before his disciples of the times. We've had 2,000 years of it. We should be well educated now, and certainly willing, if we possibly can, to do what we must to help prepare for his reappearance. Plans for which will be laid down in all probability, we are told, by 2025. First the externalization, then the gathering of the initiates and disciples, then, and only then, the return of the Christ. So let me make the facts somewhat clearer and enlarge somewhat upon these three modes of his coming, his advent. This is the real advent. There was an advent when Jesus was born in the manger, you know, and the promise there of a whole new cycle for humanity. But this is a huge advent, which involves all of humanity. So how will he come? By his overshadowing of all initiates and disciples who are today or will be at the time of his arrival, active in the three worlds of human evolution. So even now, if we are active in preparing for him, we can expect some degree of overshadowing, overlighting, if you want to call it that, influenced by his presence, and then certainly the time of his visible arrival. We don't know when. He knows the hour. And the hour is not a determined time. It's a determined condition of humanity in relation to itself and in relation to the planet. So this involves his influencing their minds telepathically. Okay. And that's, you know, spiritual telepathy on the higher mental plane. And those who can successfully build the Antikarana to the monastic permanent atom will obviously be in a better position to receive this kind of telepathic influence. The great Lord is so great. This overshadowing or influencing will be his primary work upon the mental plane. We have to keep this in mind, you know, because the picture of the Christ reappearing is a little naive in most religions, you know, the all-conquering Christ banishing Satan for 1,000 years and all the rest. The symbolism is not understood, and there's such an exaggeration. This will constitute one of his most effective methods in his proposed, I love it, spiritual interference in world affairs. So the mind, you know, of the disciples and initiates, powerful in disciples and initiates, because they are disciples and initiates, will be telepathically stimulated through the medium of these members or affiliates of the hierarchy. He will have outposts of his consciousness in every nation, and through them he can work. Well, you kind of look at the present Pope, and you know, even though back in 1980 that overshadowing was supposed to begin, I guess it is Pope John Paul, you know, his tenure was short. One doesn't know, was he murdered? One doesn't know. But the attempt would be made, I believe, the overshadowing of the Pope by the Master Jesus. And here now we're talking about the Christ. Of course, the Master Jesus is the head of the Christian Church and very active among certain of his more knowing prelates. Amazing what some must know. They don't have to be in the strictly esoteric field, you know, of our kind. They can know the Master Jesus in different ways and intimately, and you kind of wonder whether for a pope like our present pope, how close Jesus could come, how close the Christ could come in terms of visible recognition. It does, of course, strengthen the initiate. And you can imagine what it was like to be in those old days with the initiate Jesus and with the Christ as he took over the body of the initiate Jesus. You can only imagine what a tremendous stimulation to courage and to do those things which otherwise a normal man would not do. Well, you know, those of us in the New Group of World Servers, we do face that prospect after all. You know, John the Baptist lost his head, and in a group sense, it's not a job without its risks in the present day. Okay, so anyway, this is his method of his appearing, his coming, his advent, and his physical recognition. So overshadowing the minds of the initiates that we have. Number two, by the pouring out of the Christ life or consciousness upon the masses everywhere and in every nation. The astral, what have I got here? The astral body will be involved, sign Cancer of mass consciousness. Certainly the emotional body and, you know, Neptune involved here. And this means that even though the Antikorana may not have built the astral, been built, the astral body of humanity will be receptive and will have a great love energy poured into it. Now, who knows what that can mean? It's so different from the competitive, suspicious, egoistic methods of the present day. It'll melt all those things. At least for so many. This doesn't mean the Black Lodge is immediately defeated. We have to wait until the judgment day for that to happen. This spiritual inflow will bring about the reorienting of human desire and will evoke the emotional reaction to his presence. So, many, okay, will become aspirants. Changing the elevation of their desire. This, therefore, brings the astral plane within the active sphere of his influence. This involves the release of the energy of goodwill. Think of the triangles and how they will be stimulated into the hearts of men, predisposing them towards right human relations, the great theme of Shambhala at this time, at least with regard to humanity, but also with regard to the planet, because humanity is a pivotal kingdom, you know, and if humanity messes up, everybody suffers. It is this establishing of right-human relations which is the major objective of his coming triple activity. Right-human relations, it's a major shambolic theme. And in case we just look at it as some kind of innocuous thing, you know, oh yeah, we'll all get along. Oh, it involves so much more than that, just the way peace-building does. You have to study all the different areas where conflict arises. Leadership, social interaction, economics, beauty, the use of technology, the right orientation of idealism, and effective methods on the physical plane. All of that's part of peace-building. Every ashram is part of the necessary peace-building. The masses everywhere will be responsive to the work of the message of the Christ as it is implemented from the mental plane by the disciples and initiates overshadowed by the mind of the Christ. So the disciples will play their part in this, what do you call it? Called it the pouring out, pouring forth, in this pouring forth. Intermediaries are always needed, and, you know, we do have to explain these things so unlike, in a way, the present Christian expectation. It has something right about it, but it's a different worldview. And suspect as not originating from the Bible and being part of the New Age and therefore part of Satan's plot to overcome the good way as given in the Bible. But remember, the Bible is it's a book, good book for aspirants. It's not a book for disciples and initiates. I mean, it is. We have to have, you know, a copy of the New Testament, we're told, along with the Bhagavad Gita and the Yoga Sutras. And there's another one in there. Yeah, the Crest Jewel of Discrimination, Viveka Kudamani. These are the books that DK said, you got to have these, you disciples. But, you know, we have to go further. Humanity's mind has developed. And there's no reason to look at the time of the first coming of the great Lord Christ as the most holy time. The coming time can be far more holy and holistic and inclusive of millions of human beings. Then the third way of his coming is physical appearance among men. Now, all of this, I guess, was written after the war, I suspect, through his own immediate appearance. See, because that's when decision was made. Maybe it started at that high point in 1943 when a high point of love was reached, a kind of Gemini point, which was part of the seventh initiation. But you know, in 1945, the great invocation was reached, and I think a, you know, kind of decision was made at that point about the Christ's determination to return physically, which caused, we are told, the Lord of the world to release the great invocation, stanza 3. Through his own immediate appearance, he can establish a potent focal point of hierarchical energy upon earth in a manner not hitherto possible. Well, you know, I have always suspected the United Nations has something to do with that, and I think that the terrible ideological conflict now raging in the United States and then de facto throughout the world because of the influence, still present influence of the United States as part of this attempt by the Black Lodge to so raise the elemental nature of humanity that it becomes impossible for the Christ to reappear. Well, nothing will be impossible to the great Lord, but delays can happen, you know, whether hundreds of years or whatever. DK warns of delays. Was it 300 years, something like that? Or was it in the thousands? I can't quite remember. I know the hundreds were mentioned. So he can establish a focal point of hierarchical energy upon Earth in a manner not hitherto possible. I suspect it will be in second ray, New York City, second and third ray, sixth ray from the planetary center perspective. And I suspect, should the United Nations survive, as the League of Nations did not, being an altruistic, essentially altruistic organization, it would involve the unity of nations. He has never deserted humanity and has always kept his promise to stay with us all the days, even unto the end of the age. Lo, I will be with you, even unto the end of the age. Christ is the great promise keeper, and those strongly influenced by him know the importance of keeping promises. I am associated with some of those people who probably through the unhappy result of not keeping promises have learned to be utterly steadfast in the keeping of promises. I am particularly influenced by one such person. Men in all lands will know where he can be found. The locale of this focal point of his threefold spiritual activity cannot here be disclosed, for it is contingent upon the results of these sequential overshadowing processes of overshadowing and outpouring. Okay, that's true, of course, but I suspect that something that is planned. Of course, Geneva is the great planetarily, the great second ray center, and it is equally with New York an aspect of the great second ray pouring forth and an aspect of the United Nations. I was to that center once. A friend of mine worked there, and I was in the presence of that, and, you know, gratefully so. Let's see. Geneva is a first-ray, second-ray city, but a second-ray planetary center. New York is a second-ray, third-ray city, but a sixth-ray planetary center. And the sole ray of the United States is the second. Let's see how that works out. I mean, they will know. They will know best by their own methods of measurement how to judge the best place for the physical appearance of the Christ. The physical plane, headquarters. Can I get that? Well, maybe not. Of the Christ. All sounds very real, doesn't it, you know? And the Tibetan has given us a great encouragement. The further I go, the more and more I value what the Tibetan has given and realize my incapacity to realize what it really is. Its scope. Its scope always appears bigger and bigger and deeper and deeper. And I hope and think and pray that it is the same for you as you contemplate his gift via Master K.H., the Christ, and Sanat Kumara. The first of the methods will lead to the eventual physical reappearance of the Christ, which will lead to the eventual physical reappearance of the Christ, has already been set in motion. Methods leading to his physical reappearance. Disciples and initiates in all lands are starting to work the work preparatory to the outpouring of the Christ spiritual force. leading to the awakening of the Christ consciousness. That's, you know, maybe a somewhat astral thing, but also in the mind that is in Christ, as it is usually called, in the hearts of men. And this outpouring will come as the result of three activities. So now we're talking about methods that are leading to his eventual physical reappearance. Now, note that word eventual, because, you know, we're always jumping the gun on these things. There are some people who insist that Christ has made his appearance somehow in East London or something of that nature, and they show a man with a turban. Well, anyone with intuition can see that's not the Christ. Just look in the eyes, you know. But, okay, so eager are we for the type of salvation he will bring that we let our anticipation get the better of us and don't think logically about all the steps that have to be completed before it's possible. Let's see, I'm always looking for that page. Well, it's in there, you know, in Externalization of the Hierarchy, which he talks about all that has to be done first. To establish the masters visibly in the spiritual five planetary centers and with their disciples around them and their initiates around them to be consulted by the governments of the day for good advice. Well, you can see it's going to take a while. So anyway, the Christ consciousness will awaken. It's an outpouring. The outpouring, the disciples and initiates are planning for this, and the outpouring is coming. What are the activities that are preparing for it? So we're focusing now on his physical reappearance, where maybe, you know, the arms and legs of the hierarchy, namely the disciples, can do something. We can't do a whole lot about the Christ pouring forth his consciousness onto the astral plane, you know, into the mass consciousness, nor about his overshadowing of the disciples, but we can do something on the physical plane. So number one, the work and teaching of the trained disciples and initiates, as each of them in his own way points out the surety of Christ's coming and thus implements innate expectancy in masses, in the masses. Well, it's a job, isn't it? He's telling us what we have to do. So the outpouring, the great outpouring of the spiritual force leading to the awakening of the Christ consciousness is dependent on what we do. You know, we can never dodge our responsibility there, right? Can't do that. So we have to teach. And look at that word surety. Point out the surety. That's what the book, The Reappearance of the Christ, intended to do. And I'm sure that all of us, having read it a number of times, feel very sure of the Christ's reappearance, strengthened by the surety which was conveyed by that book. Number two, the evocation of a united hierarchical response through the use of the great invocation. You will note how this invocation can be interpreted in terms of three modes of the return of the Christ. So, you know, it's our best instrument for preparing the way for the reappearance of the great Lord, the use of the great invocation. It's spread all over. And these days, even the previous two verses are important. So, the three modes of Christ's return. Let light stream forth into the minds of men, influencing the mind of disciples, enlightening intelligent humanity at the mental plane. That's stanza one. Let love stream forth into the hearts of men, influencing the masses everywhere. That's the mass consciousness and the astral plane, the outpouring of the Christ spirit. It's the astral plane, stanza two. The purpose which the masters know and serve, the anchoring of hierarchical energy on earth, the physical appearance of the Christ. Physical plane, that's number three. Those are the surety, with surety. We point this out. and we do it. You know, I try to use every opportunity I can, speaking to most people, to get around to this and to the subtle view of the world. Well, maybe I have to stop here, but I'll, you know, I'm really hoping this took. I'm hoping. And I'll just say that this is the end of Rays and Initiations, RAIWC, number 84. It's now 4 months later, 15 July 17, and beginning of Rays and Initiations webinar commentary number 85. I'll just try to keep on going as long as my physical strength will last. You know, like I say, even yesterday, I couldn't have done this, but just contemplating this great book, the great teaching, I don't know, and maybe the moon moving into Aries on my sun. It's what my old teacher of astrology, Charles Janney, used to call it a lunar high. When the moon is in the same position as your sun, you get a charge, a benefit. When the moon is opposite your sun, it may call for a sacrifice. Excuse me, itchy nose here, sorry. And so taking advantage of this lunar high, at least getting something out to you to let you know I'm still alive here, thinking of you and thinking of our work together as we forge ahead in our understanding of this magnificent book and the whole treatise on the seven rays. We could work centuries, never completely understand it, and yet more is coming. So, I hope this is around an hour, probably be a little bit more, because I introduce things, and let's see how everything works out. I'll be back, and with gratitude to you for studying, for listening, in general, for studying Master DK, and trying to apply him. You can't do better than that. So, gratitude to you for doing that. Really hanging in there to be a bridge for the great teaching towards the third installment, which will begin to appear from 2025 and onward. But we've got to assimilate as much as we possibly can, and that's one of my jobs, to try to help us assimilate the great teaching that's already been given. We won't succeed, you know, but we'll succeed in more than we had achieved before. Okay, lots of love. We'll see you soon. Number 85, and onward we will go. Bye for now.